This is a download from Ormskirk Christadelphians of one of our Sunday afternoon talks. A video of the talk is also available, along with more downloads, on our website, ormskirkchristadelphians.org.uk. If you'd like to join us in person, our talks take place at our meeting room on Moorgate in Ormskirk every Sunday at 2 p.m. We hope you enjoy the talk.
I want us to think about two people. One of them is me, the person you see here in front of you. And as you all now know, my name is Ralph. The other person is called Simon. So on a typical morning during the week, I cycle to the station and catch a train to my place of work about 20 miles away from where I live. Simon can't catch a train. He's never seen one. He just has a 5-minute walk to his boat. When I get to work, first thing I do is switch on the computer. Simon's never seen or heard of a computer either. The first thing he does is inspect his boat and equipment. If when I switch on I find something wrong, which is all too common. After all, the computers are very complex. It means a quick call to help for help to the IT manager, who's an expert on it. If Simon finds anything wrong with his equipment, which again is common enough, it takes a lot of wear and tear, he gets on with mending it. Lunchtime for me is normally a quick sandwich and a look round the shops if it's not raining. Simon might have a bit of bread and some fish or cheese and some fruit and then has a rest in the shade. In the afternoon, I carry on with what I've been doing in the morning, producing designs for a new block of flats or shops or a hotel. After the heat, the dough of the day has gone, Simon pushes his boat out into the open water and drops nets to catch fish. In the evening, I catch the train back home to a 3-bed semi-detached for a cooked meal and a bit of relaxation. Simon is still working until the small hours, when he comes back and passes the fish he has caught to the traders for the early market, and then goes to bed. Two lives, totally different. A different time, 2,000 years apart. A different place, 2,000 miles away. A different language, different culture, different problems. You will, of course, have now realised that I am comparing my life with accounts in the Bible. The one we've just read about, Simon the fisherman. The Bible. The central basis for our faith. The written word of God, our prime source for information and revelation about God and his will and his purpose, our guide to life. Yet I've heard it said, how can a book written in such different circumstances so long ago have any meaning to anybody today? The cultural differences are so large. We can't understand the different cultures without deep knowledge and study. What is the point of reading the Bible and getting so heated up about it when we probably can't even understand fully what it is on about? And even without that, if we read about what Prince Harry and Meghan are doing over in California and what they call their children, or the ups and downs of the relationship in the Kardashians' household, do we think, well, great, but so what? That's their life, not mine. Not my business. What's it got to do with me? So if we fear that about current royalty and celebrity, what about the Bible? David falls out with Nabal and marries Abigail. Queen Jezebel is thrown out of an upstairs window and her body is eaten by dogs. Yes, an interesting story. But so what? What's it got to do with me? And for a lot of the stuff, history, that was written at that time, 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, the answer to the question would be, not a lot. Of some historical interest, yes, if you're interested in that sort of thing. But being God's book makes the Bible different. God's hand has been working in the writing of the Bible so it can be part of his message, his revelation to all mankind who follow after. Human culture and technology may have changed beyond recognition. God hasn't changed. He's timeless. Read in the Bible, in the book of Revelation, chapter 1. I am the Alpha and the Omega, says the Lord God, who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty. Alpha and Omega, the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet. In English you say, I am A to Z. And the psalmist writes in Psalm 102, of old you laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will remain. They will all wear out like a garment. You will change them like a robe, and they will pass away, but you are the same, and your years have no end. And that great gulf in time and space that we were worried about is nothing to God. Peter writes in his second letter, but do not overlook this one fact, beloved, that with the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. And deep down, underneath it all, people haven't really changed that much either. We have a veneer of culture, the way we do things, our language, our customs, the technology we have available to do them. But despite all this, people essentially behave the same way. We have the same basic needs, food, comfort, enjoyment, fulfillment. And the language of the Bible is being kept alive by its continued use. We're all here able to read it, translate it into our own language. And when we read it, for all the differences to our everyday experiences, we're able to recognise the people, just like ourselves, their hopes, their fears, their loves, their motives, their hates. These, in essence, haven't changed. When God is communicating with his creation in this way, it has to be able to stand for many years to all the relevant generations. So what God has done over a number of years, he's brought together a rich mix of instructions and examples. The Bible is a miscellany of many different types of literature written by different people. Historical narrative, personal tales, codes of instructions, polemics, poetry. God has taken the people of Israel as his witnesses and servants, not only to receive and write down his laws and principles, but to show in their lives how they are to work out in practice. One of the things about the Bible is we think of it as a single unit. The Bible is old, or the Bible, is it relevant to us today? But the Bible was written over the space of many years. When the New Testament was written, the oldest parts of the Bible were already possibly some 15 centuries old. The writers of the New Testament had as much reason as we to have to ask, what relevance do these ancient scriptures have for us? But it doesn't seem to have worried them. In the context of what we've just been talking about, this is how the Apostle Paul, writing in the first century, saw the Old Testament scriptures of his day, writing in his letter to the Christian community at Rome. For whatever was written in former days was written for our instruction, that through endurance and through the encouragement of the scriptures, we might have hope. So what God has had written down is just not a random collection that has been preserved by chance, but things that can teach us something, a message for all time. But is not to say that the medium that carries the message, the stories, the lives, the details, that is not to say that it is not very much the product, the human product, of the people God used to create it. And consequently, it does reflect the time and culture in which it was written. In the same way that the Bible was written in the language of the time, and if we are to understand it, we have to learn their language or have it translated into our own, for which we are fortunate, has happened many times. So we do have to understand and take into account the context of any particular passage in the Bible we are looking at it. We can't apply it mindlessly. We do have to think about it. From the particular case and details, we have to draw out the universal and timeless principles to apply in our own lives. In the New Testament, Jesus himself shows us this. If we read in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 10, starting in verse 2, "And Pharisees came up, and in order to test him, asked, 'Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?' He answered them, 'What did Moses command you?' They said, 'Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of divorce and to send her away.' And Jesus said to them, 'Because of your hardness of heart, he wrote you this commandment. But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate.'" So in Moses' original law, the practical considerations that was governing everyday life had to make allowances for human weakness. But behind that, there was a higher principle of God's ideal. And again, when Jesus was talking about the Sabbath, And this is reading from Mark chapter 2. One Sabbath he was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are you doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath.'" Again, looking for the principle. Now, because the Bible is God's book, and widely recognised as God's book, it has been well studied. The language and cultures, or languages and cultures in which it was written. And on the whole, we can see that people then were the same as today. Differences in the details of their lives, but the same needs, hopes and fears. I mean, the more you study and understand the culture of the times, the more you may be able to understand their particular circumstances, perhaps gaining a little extra particular insight into why something was written as it was. The Bible is for everybody, not just scholars. It will help you to have these extra understandings, but it's not. You don't have to deeply understand all the cultures of the Bible in order to be able to find relevance in its words. As I said, the Bible is a wide collection of writings relating to different times, different circumstances, different forms. If you read it, you'll see God applying his principles over a wide range of circumstances, times, cultures, people. The more familiar you are with the Bible from beginning to end, the more it infuses your thoughts and understanding. The more you will be able to recognise God's universal and timeless principles and apply them in your lives. It's an ongoing process. We can always get yet closer to God. So sometimes we do have to apply a little humility in our application and understanding. But the more we know the Bible, the more meaningful and relevant it will be. So is the Bible relevant today? Well, I haven't got today's newspaper. Well, I've got yesterday's. Don't have time to do a long commentary on all the issues, but I'll just pick up some of the major headlines. So, front page, big headline on the front page. EU reveals the price of Starmer's softer Brexit. New migration deal for under 30s in Europe and UK. Big issue at the moment, isn't it? Migration. The Old Testament's full of so many examples of migration, it's hard to know which to choose. Israel were migrants in Egypt. Just pick a verse out of Genesis chapter 47, verses 4 to 6. And they, that's Jacob's family at the moment, who were the people of Israel at that time, and they said to Pharaoh, "We have come to dwell in the land because your servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now, therefore, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen." Then Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, saying, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Have your father and brothers dwell in the best of the land. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen. And if you know any competent men among them, then make them chief herdsmen over my livestock.
Good.
So they were welcomed in. But that welcome didn't always actually last. Moving on a few years, beginning of Exodus. Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph, and he said to his people, "Look, the people of the children of Israel are more mighty than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and it happen in the event of war that they also join our enemies and fight against us, and so go up out of the land." Therefore they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. Just one example, as there's many examples. But then we can also pick out, I suppose, some general principles. It was in the law of Moses. This is in Exodus 22. For Israel, once they were in their land, "You shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." And some more. "Indeed, heaven and the highest heavens belong to the Lord your God, also the earth with all that is in it." That's Deuteronomy chapter 10. And in Daniel chapter 4, where Daniel is prophesying to King Belshazzar, "They shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the earth field, and they shall make you eat grass like the oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whoever he chooses. The world is God's, and we live at his allowance." Okay, next page is just a little introductory things. So, well, let's do the first front one. There's another one here. "Shoppers face a 20% premium for using supermarkets' smaller stores." The concern of this is obviously that people who are less well off don't have cars, don't have the time for big shops, are going to be more disadvantaged because they're only there having to pay more. There's lots of concerns for the poor in the Bible. I just mentioned one of the systems they had. "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God." Up to Leviticus 19, verse 9 and 10. What we got next? Oh, the biggest headline on the next page: "Monster boss was enabled by Harrods," says the lawyer. This is all about the allegations of rape by Mohammed Al-Fayed. So I suppose, yes, sexual conventions and codes change, but the same principles still apply. Even in Bible times, you've got sexual harassment from bosses. Not always by the men either. In Genesis, we get this. We learn about Joseph. Joseph has been sold into slavery in Egypt, but he's working for an Egyptian general and has actually been promoted to a high position in the household. "Thus he," that's the general, "left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said to his master's wife, 'Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me, but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against good?'" So he stood up to his mistress's advances, but He paid the price for that. He didn't take kindly to this rejection. Before he knew it, he found himself thrown into prison. Or there was King David. Then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. So David sent and inquired about the woman, and someone said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" Then David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was cleansed from her impurity. And she returned to her house, and the woman conceived. So she sent and told David and said, "I am with child." She's already married to somebody else, to one of his generals. David tried to hush it up. And in his desperation to do so, he acted really despicably. But the truth came out and the scandal blighted his life. Biggest headline on the next page. Israel strike on Beirut kills elite Hezbollah commander, RDF says. I don't think you need me to tell you the Bible has a lot to say about Israel. I started by talking about the gap in time and distance between ourselves and the Bible. The crisis in the Middle East and its long history provides a direct connection across that gap and a pointer to the future. Difficult to say anything on the subject without being accused of bias by one side or the other, or very often both. Difficult to say anything without upsetting anybody. There's much I could say on the subject, but I restrict myself to one verse. It seems very pertinent. "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples, when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples. All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces, though all nations of the earth are gathered against it." And the repercussions of what happens in that area do seem to fill all the world's procedures. Well, I won't carry on for the whole of the paper. I mean, it's a story about Keir Starmer's wardrobe, and got plenty to say about bribery in the Bible too. But newspapers are full of bad news. And the Bible has some pretty unpleasant stories because it reflects real life. But it also has good news too. Good news for all of us about where this is all going, where we are yet to go in the future, and what we have to look forward to. So do take a look. And if the Bible was a right on the minute, right up to date, a book for today, it wouldn't be a day for tomorrow or yesterday. As it is a book for all time.
We hope you enjoyed that talk. For more downloads, videos and information about what we believe and details of our meeting times, go to our website, ormskirkchristadelphians.org.uk.